For many of us, Muslim or Arab music sounds like this. We certainly don't think of this as Muslim music. That's the Pakistani punk band The Kominas. They're self-defined taqwa core. Taqwa means piety in Arabic, and core stands for hardcore. The word was penned by Michael Muhammad Knight, a white American convert to Islam, in his novel The Taqwa Cores. Since the novel came out, it has sparked a punk movement, a documentary, and now a full-length feature film. Ann Strainchamps caught up with Michael Muhammad Knight between classes at Harvard, where he's getting his master's degree in Islamic studies. They talked about taqwa core and how an Irish Catholic kid became an observant Muslim at age 16.
Well, I had a really wounding experience with organized religion. And mainly that was just having a very simplistic, very narrow definition of Islam that I couldn't carry anymore. I was just really hurt and really alone and feeling like maybe I wasn't qualified to call myself a Muslim, but at the same time, I couldn't be anything other than Muslim. You know, it was so deep within me, it was so ingrained in me that I would have an attachment to Islam all my life. But, you know, at the same time, I didn't know if there was a place for me in the mosque.
So in the midst of this heartache and wondering whether you even could still call yourself a Muslim, you wrote Taqwa Core about a group of young, rebellious Muslim punks. How would you describe them?
Well, to me, the house, the punk house that these kids live in is like a mosque with no imam in it. You know, like I said, I was hurt by this narrow definition of Islam, and I wanted a way to engage Islam without really it holding anything over me. You know, this house, like you walk into this house and there's all these different voices. There's feminists, there's gay Muslims, there's punk Muslims, there's drunks, there's stoners, and there's kids who try to go by all the rules. And they're all, you know, in conflict together in this house. There's no authority. I mean, you're the one who decides what Islam is when you step in there. And I was just fantasizing. I mean, I couldn't imagine it really happening in real life. But I was just fantasizing about, you know, a place where I could be a marginal Muslim in that way, you know, where I could step in and there's no rules.
And to say that touched a nerve is kind of an understatement. I mean, there's a legendary story about the book and what followed that's kind of famous by now. I mean, first of all, the book was being circulated underground, you know, photocopied sheafs of paper. And you got an email from a guy who asked you how to get in touch with your characters?
Yeah, he actually thought there was a real-life taqwa core scene. And I said to him, you know, I'm sorry, this is fiction. And he said, well, I'm taqwa core. And this is just a made-up word. I didn't know that someone out there would actually claim that. He said, well, I'm taqwa core. I'm going to make it real. This was a kid who was just, you know, under house arrest, you know, locked up in his room. You know, his mom finds his drug stash and, like, you know, tears down his punk posters. And he's sitting in his room, like, just recording songs on his tape recorder and making silkscreen T-shirts with the Ayatollah Khomeini's face on it. You know, that was the start of, like, this actual manifestation of the kinds of things I was talking about.
So fast forward to today. You know, the taqwa core movement you imagined is real now. I mean, how big is it?
I like to think of it as a growing circle of friends more than a movement, because like when people say that it's a scene or a movement, even though I guess maybe it is those things, it implies some ideological cohesion. And we've always been trying to avoid that, because among us, there's kids who are atheists. There's kids who are pious Muslims in their own way. There's kids who are into Sufism. And there's people from non-Muslim backgrounds who relate to it on some level. So it very much fits the anarchic feeling of the novel, you know, where you have all these different voices and no one triumphs over the others. That's all I wanted. I mean, that was my fantasy, and it's kind of manifested in real life.
Well, there's also a lot of music, a lot of Muslim punk bands. Could we talk a bit about the relationship, or I guess the affinity between punk and Islam? I mean, what is it about punk that speaks to Islam and vice versa?
Well, for me, you know, like you said, I was very young when I had gone through this conversion and also the disillusionment. And when I was going through this intellectual confusion and this spiritual confusion, I couldn't really voice it in the mosque. I couldn't go to the imam, who I had a lot of respect for, and say, well, I don't know if I believe this. I don't know if I believe that. And in Islam, we have something called adab, which is manners or etiquette. It's the way that you talk to people. And the concept of adab is often used to shame people or to put them down or to keep them from voicing their concerns. If a woman complained about sexism in the mosque, they would say, oh, you have no adab, sister, you have no adab. Well, after my disillusionment, I started hanging out with the punk rock kids, and they had their own adab. And punk rock adab is very different from traditional Islamic adab. Punk rock adab is to never apologize and to throw your middle finger in the air and shout and scream and pound your fist on the table and make the world listen to you and never compromise and never surrender. So, you know, when I started hanging out with the punk rock kids, I wished that I could take that punk rock adab and inject that into my Islamic life. The Prophet Muhammad smashed idols. You know, he took on the establishment, and, you know, by the end of his life, he was the establishment, but he was, you know, he was the lone voice just crying against the injustice of his time. And I think that's very punk rock.
So in some ways, he might have identified more with the hardcore Muslims today than with their more traditional Muslim parents.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, Islam has become so diverse in the centuries since the Prophet. And it's really, really hard for me to say, you know, who he would side with. I mean, I don't think he would side with the ones who say, well, the Prophet's, you know, clothes never went below his ankles, so I'm going to roll up my pants so that my pants never pass my ankles. I don't know if you'd be down with those guys.
There was a cover story in the New York Times not too long ago. The title was The Jihadist Next Door. It's a portrait of kind of another American white boy who fell in love with Islam, kind of a similar trajectory to yours, except that he joined a jihad and is a kind of terrorist in training. Did you ever come close at all to following in his path?
I actually did. I actually came very close. When I was in Pakistan, the first time in the 90s, I really wanted to go fight for Chechnya. And I was actually talked out of it by the Muslims around me. They said, oh, you know, you like to read, you like to study, you like to write. You would do a lot more good for Muslims in that way than just becoming another body in a ditch.
I guess I'm kind of wondering, as a Muslim, what your relationship is to America.
Well, that's very complicated, too, because, you know, every religion has to go through some kind of negotiation with America. You know, like, during World War II, if you look at the things that people are saying about Buddhists in America, you know, they're saying, oh, if you go to a Buddhist temple, you know, in the basement, they pull up all these blueprints of American bridges and American buildings, and they talk about how to blow them up. I mean, this is what people are saying about Buddhism. And now Buddhism is supposed to be the most innocent religion. People treat it as such, you know. And I think this is just America's moment, or this is Islam's moment to be the un-American religion. And I think it will pass. But it is tough for me. You know, when I was going on the Hajj in Mecca, I was at the Kaaba, you know, close enough to the Kaaba to touch it, and I saw another pilgrim who his bag that he was carrying had the Iraqi flag on it. And I went up to him and, you know, all I could say was astaghfir, astaghfir, and we just hugged, and I was crying, you know, in the shadow of the Kaaba saying, you know, forgive me, forgive me, forgive me. And that's the only Arabic that I could say. I didn't have a lot of experience with the Arabic language, but I could say stagfir, 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 stagfir. And we just cried and held each other.
So we talked about what you find beautiful still about Islam. What about the punk movement? Would you still consider yourself a punk?
Well, that's tough because, number one, you know, I'm going to grad school. I'm 32 years old. I'm married. You know, and I'm just a nerd who hangs out in the library all day, more or less. So I don't know how punk any of that is. But if I'm ever put in a position where speaking the truth will sabotage me in terms of my personal interest, or sabotage my relationship to an institution, I would like to think that I would still tell the truth. And to me, that's what punk is.
Truth to power.
Truth to power.
That's what most religions were at the beginning, too.
Exactly. Until they become the power.
Yeah. Yeah, story of our culture.
And Strincham speaking with Michael Muhammad Knight. He's the author of the novel The Taquakors. The film version of the book, also called The Taquakors, was recently featured at the Sundance Film Festival.